So we have spoken about listening in the various discussions that have happened in this and the previous chapters. Let me add more value to this process by taking you through the different types that are there. So one type is known as critical listening, something which is similar to the critical thinking process. Now here, when there is something which is being said by the candidate or a fellow interviewer, which is very important, which, you know, can make or break your decision related to the candidate moving further, it's paramount that you pay attention to the way that something is presented. So if you ask them to solve something, give their specific inputs and thoughts, you have to practice critical thinking. You have to do away with what you're doing by focusing on what the other person is saying or doing. The other type of listening is discriminative listening, being sensitive to non-verbal cues or clues in a speaker, such as looking at the body language and the facial expressions and listening to the tone. So sometimes the words do not matter. What matters more is how do they represent themselves? Do they have the requisite amount of confidence? So this is derived or culled out of a process which is the discriminative listening, where you focus only on a few aspects of communication rather than the entire gamut of communication. The next type is the informative type of listening, where you tend to pay attention to determine what the speaker is trying to tell you. So sometimes you have to read between the lines. You have to listen for hidden information that they are trying to give you. Okay, they cannot say it explicitly, so you have to practice what is known as informative listening. Now, another important skill which comes in handy for every recruitment professional and interviewer is the skill of probing. In fact, we've also covered this in the questioning types. So to obtain information from candidates, you frequently have to explicitly or candidly ask for it. So whenever you make requests for information, you're using the skill of probing. So right from the basic open-ended questions to questions which give you more information, you are probing. So probing takes form of asking of questions. But you're also probing when you request a demonstration or an explanation. So a basic, as I had mentioned, question set, which are open-ended. So tell me about, your role as a senior leader when you were a part of this organization. So they tell you the details and then you can tell them, okay, what were the three important aspects that you prevented the team from doing in order to not decline from your performing status? So if you notice, the second part is also a probe where you get into the specifics of what the person has done as per their experience in the past organization related to their conducting of the team as a leader. So there are two types of probes, like the two types of questions, open and closed probes. A request for information that allows the candidate to speak freely is an open probe. Like the open-ended questions which we have seen earlier, these generally begin with words like what, how, why, tell me, show me. Okay, so I just explained in the previous slide about tell me. Such probes, they give candidates an opportunity to respond in whatever way they wish. They can add a lot of flexibility and originality to the answers that they will be articulating to your questions. A request that limits the candidate, so on the contrary, a request that limits the candidate's response to limited number or few options or alternatives is known as a closed probe. So closed probes generally begin with words like do, are, is, or which. So which organization was it where you began your leadership journey, where you got promoted in the managerial role. So they wouldn't say, okay, the organization was so and so, and then this happened and that happened and that happened. So they will just briefly pause after naming the organization, right? Okay. So was it in Accenture that you were first promoted as a team leader? So what would they answer? Yes, it was indeed Accenture. Or no, let me correct you, it was not Accenture. It was the earlier organization, which was Persistent Systems, where I was promoted. Simple as that, right? So you get to understand their exact approach from this and the clarity that they possess as well. So there is a purpose for open and closed-ended probes that we need to understand. So use open probes in the beginning of a conversation to elicit or gain information. It's like opening up a tap of water. So if you want more water to come out of the tap or the faucet, you can open it, correct? And when you want to control the flow, correct? When you want to control the flow, you might want to open it partly by asking a closed probe. So here you're being more expansive, or your demand is more expansive, correct? And the closed probe, it is more of a control mechanism. So we also need to rely upon the concept of closed probes. The reason being, sometimes open probes, they fail to get the information you need, or they may not be the most efficient way to find out what you want. So if a lot of information comes and that's not relevant, you will be lost in the sea of information. What needs to be done is to find a way to control the conversation by using closed probes. This will help you uncover the specific information you need. Let's come back to the example that I had provided. So I had stated, so when was the first time that you were made a leader from an engineer? Okay, when did you become a team lead? So closed probes are also useful to check whether you understood something that was said or done. Confirming with the closed probes help you avoid misunderstanding. So correct me if I'm wrong, this is the next test that you're supposed to give us in the next 20 minutes. So you will be given 15 minutes, and by the 15th or 20th minute, you're supposed to complete this. Have you understood? So there would be a yes or a no. So this would be a confirmation mechanism. So asking probing questions is, of course, it's a very powerful strategy to find out more detail. Apart from interviewing, it also is useful in terms of training and development, in terms of coaching and mentoring, and various other organizational functions. Sometimes it is as simple as asking your respondent for an example to help you understand a statement they have made. So if they say they have exemplary leadership skills, so would you like to give us an example from the last organization where this was demonstrated? So you are asking, you're putting an open probe, correct? So at other times you need additional information for clarification. So when do you need this report by, and do you want to see a draft before I give you my final version? So this may be a conversation between probably two programmers or two accountants, or to investigate whether there is a proof for what has been said. How do you know that the new database cannot be used by the sales force? So these are important questions which sharpen your ability to gain clarity and elicit the right amount of information. So probing questions, as I had mentioned about clarity, so gaining clarification to ensure you have the whole or the complete story and that you understand it thoroughly. It also is beneficial in drawing information out of people who are trying to avoid or conceal telling you. For example, everything is right about a candidate, but there is a brief overlap in the experiences in one of their set of jobs. So you would like to interview this person, spend time with them, okay? But you would like to know about this particular mismatch. So a probe or a probing question would help you in this context. Now let's look at certain important aspects of preparing to interview. Okay, these can be considered as phase-wise steps. So prepare in advance for the interview. So, well-prepared you will go. The well-prepared that you will go, the more of clarity and relevance will you be able to find. So in this, know what you want in a candidate before you begin with the interview. Review the job specifications and requirements that have been prepared. Know the job and its responsibilities, and of course, review the JD or the job description. Thereupon, prepare a list of standard questions concerning the candidate's skills, their abilities, past work performance that you want them to answer for you. Prepare a list of prioritized and measurable criteria or criterion, either in the form of a worksheet or other methods, for analyzing and comparing the candidates. Review the candidate's resume prior to the interview. Set specific appointment times and reasonable time limits. Be prepared to justify the use of any required employment test, which we've already covered in the previous chapter. Typically, the most legally defensible tests are those that involve a piece of the job. So this will justify your selection of the candidate. Second part is collect pertinent information during the interview. Now, of course, we all know it's a common sense element that past behavior is a predictor, or it predicts, to some amount of accuracy, future behavior. So look for the candidate's behavioral patterns as you collect information. Are they feeling comfortable with the questions, or are they feeling edgy? Is there something which is a part of their communication patterns that indicate that they are nervous, or are they open and conducive to you asking and probing away? So oftentimes, by listening to how the candidate responds to your questions about previous jobs, you will be able to get a very good idea of what their behavior will be in the future. So listening can also be, extended to listening to their body language, not just the words or the sound of their voice. As a part of this particular point, try not to offer too much detailed information up front, so that the candidate will be able to formulate or articulate answers that exactly fits your company's needs. So if you offer on a platter the values or other aspects of the company, they might just, go ahead and answer the questions from that perspective, or they might, falsify some of their responses to you. So don't put the right words in their mouth. Remember, the candidate hopefully wants the job and will be looking to say the right things to impress you. So if you say, for example, if you say, our organization believes in the power of creativity and innovation, and this has to be done in a collaborative manner. Now, what does the candidate do? They say, hey, I was a part of Skunkworks, which is an innovation mechanism or a tool, and we didn't do it alone. It had no meaning. So single individual was never, their efforts were never valued as much as collaboration. Now, do you really know that this happened? Or is the candidate smart enough to, you've put the words in their mouth and they are trying to impress you? So be careful about this fact. Ask questions that focus on their past performances. For example, you may want to ask, how do you keep track of your own schedules and desk work in your current position? This will give you a lot of insight of what they are doing currently on the job, rather than what they might do, when they join your organization. Since the past is a good predictor of the future, as stated earlier. Again, ask specific structured questions in regard to specific problems, correct, that the job holder may face. Now here it leads to a better aspect of validity and reliability whenever there are multiple interviewers, so that there is a consistency that is observed in the answers of the candidates. Notice how well the candidate listens and responds. So it's not just you that are supposed to practice active listening, but it also has to be a part of the gamut of communication skills that candidates need to possess. Note the candidate's choice of words and nonverbal behavior. Are they answering your questions with the required amount of clarity? Of course, demonstrate clarity on your own part or a need for clarity by active listening. Clarify the reasons why the questions are being asked. So sometimes it is useful to inform them as to why they are being asked a certain genre or a certain cadre of questions. Okay, as like there was a mention of explicitly telling them why are notes being taken, correct? Notice how or which questions they ask first, as they may be their primary concerns. So if they have certain concerns, they have certain apprehensions that they want you to tell them or clarify on, notice what are those. Take detailed handwritten notes. Of course, this we've discussed in a very detailed or an explicit manner. Record information pertaining to the set criteria that will help in the evaluation of these candidates. Organize and analyze the information immediately after the interview when the memory is fresh. Now we move to the third point, which is look and act professionally during the interview. So it's very important that the ones who are conducting the interview dress appropriately. So you need to dress in business formals, or if you have a t-shirt which represents your organization and looks smart, you might want to wear that. Avoid appearing bored and fatigued. Remember, you are the face of the organization. You're the first few people that they will meet from the organization. Of course, keep an amenable environment, but it should also be business-like. So while conducting interviews online or offline, it has to be a business-like setting. Structure the interview and inform the candidate of the structure, and provide information on the company and the job to each candidate so that they are well informed and have a good amount of clarity. As a part of your preparations as a recruitment professional to interview any candidate, it's also important to consider treating them fairly. So treat all the candidates fairly. Use your list of standard questions during each interview so that you treat the applicants equally. Refer to the criteria or criterion for analyzing the candidates. Ask questions in regard to the job criteria, those questions that are relevant and do not seem to be discriminating on any note. I think we have covered this topic, in good detail in the last chapter. So we will just, keep it to this particular detail level. Be courteous and respectful. So begin the interview on schedule. So this is the biggest way of showing respect to a candidate, is not to make them wait for long hours. Allow sufficient time for the interview so that, the interviewee, the candidate, is able to speak their mind out. Appreciate the candidate's accomplishments. So if they have recently accomplished something as a part of their previous job role, be kind enough to appreciate that. Do not patronize the candidate. Now, what do we mean by patronizing the candidate? So do not fraternize or flatter the candidate unnecessarily. Correct. So wherever due credit is required, give it in a brisk, polite manner and proceed. Do not linger around over there. Do not, of course, argue with the candidate. So if you think there is some point, politely probe the candidate, but do not argue with them. Of course, thank the candidate for their time and interest. The sixth point is facilitate open communication. So facilitate means you are bringing in the aspect of open communication into the interviewing process. So immediately attempt to establish a rapport with the candidates by breaking the ice. We've covered this, the specific techniques as well, by engaging into small talk topics or any idle chit chat before getting into the nitty-gritties of the interview. Of course, promote a relaxed environment with a free-flowing conversation. So keep the complex questions for the midst or the end of the conversation. Do not dominate the discussion by talking too much. Now, this is one of the important traps that many recruiters or interviewers fall in. They love talking. So there are many professions or occupations where people aspire to be a part of because of their love to talk. But here, to make the process effective, restrain yourselves or refrain from doing the talking. So many experts use, and of course I also across the years have followed these experts, many experts use the 80-20 rule. So what do? You talk 20% of the time and listen the rest of 80%, or let them do the talking for the rest 80% of the time. And we've seen this in the previous discussions as well. This gives you a lot of free-flowing information. You are able to elicit relevant and important information which can be recorded and used in the future. Politely probe the candidate for information by asking open-ended questions. In this process, it's always important to ask the questions in a structured manner that will require some thought from their end. So it's always important to make them think, and think in a specific critical manner which gives you more insights about their work, about their hobbies, about their experience, about their qualification, and so on. And of course, again and again, we don't fail to mention this, is to listen so that they do not provide you with, okay? So if they do not provide you with specific results, repeat the probing. Explain the selection process also to the candidates as a part of open communication. Now let's move to the types of interviews. The most commonly used tools for selection process is the personal interview. So different purposes of a personal interview are, of course, one may be to rate a candidate for his physical appearance. So, you know, this may come true for certain occupations, like maybe, you know, entry into the armed forces, where they are looked upon, their height is checked and other physical dimensions are looked upon. Educational achievements and qualifications. For various jobs in the corporate sector, it's more reliant on the levels of intelligence, the background, the interests, and the aptitudes as well. So we've already covered some of these. Quickly, let's move through them. Screening in person or over the telephone. So this is done in the earlier stages of the hiring process. Screening is done either in person or over the telephone, as we know. And we generally tend to screen out or weed out applicants who do not have qualifications required for the job. In-person screening is often done at the job fairs or employment open houses or ramp-ups or campaigns. These are events where companies accept applications during the event itself. I'm sure, people who've stayed in the A or the B, level towns or cities, have all experienced job fairs, you know, at least once in a year. The next is the behavioral type of interviews. So in this type, the interviewers will ask a set of questions that are specifically related to job skills that fit the job. In fact, we've covered this comprehensively in the last chapter. Some of the topics include problem solving, leadership, conflict resolution, and initiative. Breakfast or luncheon or lunch interviews. So even though these interviews are conducted over a meal, they are still like a business situation. I remember, in fact, a part of my career, after I had quit KPIT, there was one of the interviews where the interviewers had met me in a prominent hotel where we had a brunch together. So there was a brunch sort of an interview, and there were questions asked. So in this, maintain a positive or a professional mannerism as well as good table manners. So this type of interview may feel more informal than other types, but you must still maintain the business atmosphere. So since you are the one who's facilitated this, your organization has paid for it, importantly make it as something which is professional and critical. Group interviews. So you're all candidates or small groups of candidates are interviewed together. So generally this happens also for many places where the campus recruitment is happening, or people are called for a specific position where there are groups of people who are interviewed together. The time of the interview is saved over here. Filtering happens quickly, so you rapidly move from recruitment to selection. A group interview is similar to a group discussion as well. So a topic is given and they're asked to discuss. So we used to frequently conduct interviews when I was a part of both Wipro, the startup, as well as for KPIT, where we had 20, 30, 40 people, depending upon the need and the number of participants, and we used to conduct the group interview. So the most, people who were vital, who were answering, who were energetic, who were put to the next round, and we created a filter mechanism for the rest who encountered a lack in fluency, lack in the thought process, lack in clarity, and lack in initiative. So the interviewer carefully watches the candidates. So we used to do that. We used to observe and we used to judge the behavior of each candidate in a situation. The people who demonstrated proactiveness and the other qualities I had mentioned used to be put forward. Audition. So of course, an audition, as you have come to know, is for specific occupations. Okay. So many professions require job applicants to audition, like a singer, like a talent, which is like an acting talent, an actor. There may be auditions for a certain role, correct? So if that role is not available and they want some fresh face, they will create an audition. An audition allows each person to demonstrate their particular skills and abilities to an employer. Stress interviews are the next type. So the purpose of this interview is to find out how the candidate behaves in a simulated stress-related environment. So many a times, this environment is fabricated or created so as to test the candidate. In this, they check whether the candidate gets angry or confused or frightened or nervous, or on the contrary, remains cool in a stressful situation. This may be like a test administered. Usually the test would be taking 30 minutes, but the candidates have to complete it in 10 minutes. So because of the crunch in time, it creates stress. There might be an immediate offer also done, like, okay, if you answer 5 questions, we will give you an immediate offer. So it's again a stressful situation. So the candidate who keep their cool in a stressful situation, they are selected for such jobs. So here the interviewer tries to create, as I had mentioned, I had given you 2 very relevant examples of this situation. This is done purposely by asking the candidate rapid questions. Sometimes it's also prudent to criticize their answers. Hey, I don't feel so. So whatever you've said, I don't agree in principle. So usually this disrupts the flow and makes them stressed. And how do they react? Do they react in the right spirit, or do they react in a negative fashion is what is checked. Or of course, interrupting them repeatedly. So these, along with the examples I had given, make this particular type of interview simple, and in certain situations you might want to conduct such interviews. The next is the depth interview. So of course, this falls under what we've already covered in the last chapter, a semi-structured or a semi-structured interview format. Here the candidate has to give detailed information about their background, special interests, etc. So it begins in with a format of a structure, and then it can be loose bound or spread, or it can go to several, it can branch to various depths. So here they have to give complete information. The depth interview tries to find out if the candidate is an expert in a subject. So if they have, you know, stated that they are an expert, okay, or they are very seasoned in black box testing. So you might want to come out with all the internal details of that process. You might want to know the sub-processes, you might want to know the clients who benefited, you might want to know what are the shortcomings of the process, the challenges, and so on. So here the interviewer must have a very good understanding of the topic along with the human behavior. So what are some of the important steps, or the three important steps of conducting the interview? So the first step is, of course, to open the interview, that is to put the candidates at ease. So this is a sort of a summarizing we are doing at the end of the chapter. Gathering information, that is asking questions and listening to responses, and of course, closing the interview, create a positive impression of your organization. So there are three steps you should complete when opening the interview. So as a part of the very first step, this is building the rapport, stating the agenda, thereby creating clarity, and asking for their acceptance. In gathering information, of course, we have covered this thoroughly. Just a quick revision. Ask leading questions at times where needed. Ask follow-up questions, probe in this manner, and transition to the next subject. So leading questions essentially give you a control. Follow-up questions enhance your elicitation of required information, and of course, transition leads you to develop a further control. So now we've reached to the stage where we will discuss about how to close the interview successfully. So these are the following steps, four important steps. So first one is ask for and answer questions. So very important for you to ask for and answer questions. So candidates might request you for a clarity. They might have apprehensions. They might have explicit or implicit questions. So you need to, you know, candidly ask them and answer their questions. Promote the organization and the job. This has been covered numerous number of times. Outline the next steps, tell them what comes next, and thank them for their time. So in this particular manner and fashion, we have completed a very important and a critical chapter where we have learned about the various techniques related to the interviewing process. Thank you.